This is The Guardian.
Regid Ahmed here on Gadigal Land with the full story. It was the bill that the Prime Minister hoped would bring people together. Instead, Labor's hate speech legislation and the Liberal Party's decision to endorse it.
With no alternative, the divorce has happened. It's not coming. It's happened.
But she has also forced the coalition into an untenable position that can no longer continue. This is not what the National Party wants.
The entire National's front bench has quit Susan Lee's shadow cabinet, leaving the coalition to come to terms today. Political editor Tom McElroy on how the coalition found its way back to crisis. It's Thursday, the 22nd of January. Hi, Tom. It's good to see you.
Regid, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on again. What a time in Australian politics. Look, has the coalition definitely split up? Can we say for sure?
Yes, we can say today, Thursday, that they have split up. David Littleproud, the Nationals leader, has been very clear that he sees the partnership between the Libs and the Nationals as untenable under Susan Lee's leadership. He warned her before the resignations that we saw last night that if she insisted on the three front benchers who voted against Labor's hate speech laws resigning from the front bench, that there would be a big fallout and that the rest of the Nationals would depart her shadow ministry. And that's indeed what's happened. The lasting effect will be that the Nationals will sit separately from the coalition in Parliament and that the Liberals will obviously sit by themselves. And that's a political problem for both parties, and it's certain to put pressure on Susan Lee's leadership.
So David Littleproud made it clear under Susan Lee's leadership. So what does that mean for Susan Lee?
Well, she was already facing a difficult political year. Before Christmas, she was under pressure because of a messy performance by the Liberal Party since the election and poor polling that has continued into the new year. Now that the Bondi hate speech laws have been debated and passed in Parliament, I think politics in earnest will begin for the year, and Susan Lee's critics will be circling. I think that was the case before the split with the coalition, and it's certainly the case after. Even today, some of her colleagues are taking soundings about whether Lee's leadership should continue, whether her position is untenable itself. And I think probably it was inevitable that she would face a challenge this year. I think it's almost certain now.
Do you have any ideas? Can you give us a suggestion about who might challenge her?
Well, it's difficult to predict these things. There's a few factors that will play into it. The first is that nobody is honest when leadership challenges are on the horizon.
Good point.
Everybody will speak privately, speak off the record and say different things to their colleagues and to journalists and give assurances that won't be reliable. The second is that the people who bring on a leadership challenge aren't always the candidates. You know, you sometimes see somebody resign strategically or make some other move to force the crisis on and give cover to people who want to challenge the leader. We've seen that in the past couple of leadership challenges here in Canberra. But the two main challenges are potentially Angus Taylor, the Liberal frontbencher, and Andrew Hastie, the backbencher. Of course, our listeners will remember that Andrew Hastie quit Susan Lee's frontbench a few months ago when he was told that he wouldn't have a role in the formulation of the party's immigration policy. From the backbench, he's been quite high profile, including on social media, trying to set the terms of debate around various things, including the hate speech laws, and really establishing himself as a potential policy and political leader of a faction of the Liberal Party.
So that could all be in the future. But we haven't heard from Susan Lee at the moment. She said she won't comment.
Yeah. Last night, when this thing was really kicking off, Susan Lee put out a statement encouraging the Nationals frontbenchers to rethink their decision, including asking David Littleproud to reconsider. She said that she wouldn't immediately accept the resignations and wouldn't appoint new frontbenchers in the empty spots in the hope that the Nationals might reconsider. And then today, Thursday, her position is that the National Day of Mourning for the victims of the Bondi terror attacks should take precedence and that it's not a day for politics. So it'll be a difficult day for Susan Lee as she seeks to meet the moment on mourning the victims of the Bondi killings, but equally to make sure that her position is sound.
I'm curious about the political calculation here, and I'm wondering if you can explain it for us, why Susan Lee has said she won't comment. It's a National Day of Mourning today, Thursday, for the Bondi attack. But David Littleproud has made the decision to come out and speak so strongly.
Yeah, David Littleproud had a press conference first thing this morning in Queensland. I think it's good that he did that. He hadn't spoken since this all happened yesterday, not even in a written statement, and it was necessary for him to explain his position. You know, before he held his press conference, we didn't know whether the Nationals and Liberals were staying in a coalition. We didn't know if David Littleproud was intending to continue as the party's leader. Those things were cleared up from his press conference. Since he's made those comments to the media, he's decided himself not to speak further. So for Susan Lee, I think she's trying to let cooler heads prevail today, but equally I think she'll be sincere in not wanting to be, you know, seen to be playing politics on a day when the Jewish community, people around Bondi and the country at large are trying to remember a pretty terrible thing that happened little more than a month ago in Sydney.
I know events have moved really fast, so I'm interested in just catching up here on where things started to fall apart. There's a lot of talk about this being a big communication breakdown. Do we know, in terms of the timeline, the moment things fell apart between the shadow cabinet agreeing to support Labor's hate speech laws, and then the three Nationals frontbench senators deciding to cross the floor to vote against them?
It's not exactly clear. The two sides have different accounts of this exact moment. The Susan Lee camp are clear that they believe that Shadow Cabinet had settled a position and that Shadow ministers were bound by that decision made in the room, that the Liberals and Nationals would support Labor's bill. You know, there'd been a lot of changes agreed between the Liberal Party and the Labor Party. So the bill had been watered down, extra protections had been added to address some of the coalition's concerns. Coming out of that meeting, Susan Lee and her backers believed that the coalition's position was settled and everyone would vote accordingly. The Nationals in the lower house abstained on the vote. They said that there was more detail needed before they could put their views on record. And by the time it got to the Senate for debate on Tuesday night, as you say, we saw these three senators, Bridget McKenzie, Ross Cadell, and Susan MacDonald, cross the floor and vote against the bill. They believed that they weren't bound by the decision that the shadow cabinet had made because the amendments had changed so quickly and there hadn't been a subsequent party room meeting to settle the position. They offered to resign and asked Susan Lee to accept or reject their resignations. And as we know, she accepted them. That is the spark that has led to this bigger crisis and I think is going to continue to spiral for Susan Lee in the coming days.
You've just described it as the spark. Can we say that this is not really about hate speech laws, or did these laws become a sort of fundamental to a values issue in the coalition?
I think they're complicated in the politics, really. I don't think that it was primarily a problem with the coalition's position on Labor's hate speech laws. I think the foundation here is the poor state of the coalition more generally. Our listeners will remember that the Liberal and National Party split briefly straight after the election and patched things up in about 48 hours. But there are some big personalities in the Nationals Party and they are very territorial and very concerned when the Liberals try and tell them what to do. I think big personalities like Bridget McKenzie are central here. I think her view was that there hadn't been sufficient consultation and that she shouldn't be bound by a decision that she felt hadn't been properly resolved. The other factors that go into this, I think, are that David Littleproud himself isn't the strongest leader of the Nationals. He's had to unite quite a divided party room to retain his position. And a few times over recent years, there have been potential challenges, including straight after the election. So he's got a difficult job in that sense. I think this vote on the hate speech laws might be seen as the straw that broke the camel's back, but my view is the underlying politics, the underlying personality differences have existed for a long time.
Did it have to be this way? What is it, partly a difficult relationship between Lee and Littleproud that has got us here?
Yeah, I think the difficult relationship between the parties is a key factor. You know, they've been together in coalition for decades and there haven't been many times where consideration of them going their separate ways has been taken seriously, let alone the splits. And of course, getting back together after the split in the wake of the election was difficult. The line that Susan Lee insisted on in that reunification was that shadow cabinet solidarity would be respected and that David Littleproud would require his front benchers to follow that rule, which is a convention across both sides of politics and is longstanding. So when these three National senators broke that rule and offered their resignations, I think Susan Lee's team probably viewed that she had no choice but to accept them. Otherwise, she would be going back on the kind of central agreement that she and Littleproud had. Complicating this is that David Littleproud had written to her yesterday morning, Wednesday morning, and said that if she accepted these resignations, the whole front bench was going to walk and he was going to walk with them. So Susan Lee knew what that was going to be like and how difficult it was going to be. And I think she stuck to the principle anyway. And people like John Howard have come to her defence and said that it was an impossible situation and she had to stick to the principle of shadow cabinet solidarity. The problem, of course, is that now the political situation is more complex for her. It'll be difficult for the Liberals to exist in Parliament by themselves. They certainly can't win an election by themselves, not on the numbers of the current polling or numbers generally. They mostly need Nationals numbers to get over the line to beat Labor. And, of course, the other political aspect for Susan Lee is that her position within her own party is not a strong one, and any chaos or mess, and there's plenty of both, will undermine her in the eyes of some colleagues and potentially bring on a challenge, as we've discussed.
We'll be right back. We're hearing a lot of analysts say underneath all of this, we cannot ignore the threat of One Nation. The Nationals are looking at that.
Yeah, we've seen One Nation push ahead of the coalition on primary votes in at least one poll. You know, they're having a real moment in polling, as much as 20% support across the community. And they would traditionally draw some of their vote from the right of politics in Australia, from the National Party and even from the Liberal Party. And of course, Barnaby Joyce, the former Nationals leader and the Deputy Prime Minister, has defected to One Nation, becoming their first lower house MP for a long time. So, yes, the Nationals feel that threat. And I think that politics was underlying some of the debate about the hate speech laws and some of the response to Bondi more generally. Immigration's going to be a big issue this year, and we'll hear a lot from the Nationals on that issue as well as the Libs. But some of that will be driven by One Nation, and some of the positions and rhetoric I think will be pretty similar between the two parties. So, yes, the existential challenge that the coalition is facing and the Nationals are facing, the threat from One Nation is a factor here, definitely.
Tom, I can't let you go without taking a look at Labor and the Prime Minister and what this all means. I mean, you must feel like you've got political whiplash there. We were talking on Sunday and saying it was high stakes for the Prime Minister at the start of the week. How does it look for Labor now?
Yeah, it's certainly Anthony Albanese's lucky day. He's had a lot of political attacks since Bondi. His response to the terror attack has been criticised, including his resistance to call a royal commission and then his eventual back down to do just that. He had difficulty getting this legislation through. Of course, he had to split the bill and make some big amendments and carve off some of the hate speech provisions that Labor was eager to pass. And just when the coalition looked like they might have won the day by, to use their phrase, being the adults in the room and agreeing to amendments to get the bill through, they've blown themselves up. I think Anthony Albanese will be feeling like the politics could swing back towards him. He might be preparing for a different opponent across the dispatch box when Parliament sits in February. I think whatever happens, the front bench of the opposition is going to look pretty different, and once again, Anthony Albanese could be the political winner from things. I said in my analysis piece today, he might be the luckiest bloke in Canberra.
I mean, just finally and briefly, was this Labor's plan? Did they want to wedge Susan Lee with the speed of the legislation? Did they get what they wanted?
I think they certainly tried to wedge the coalition by putting the hate speech provisions and the gun laws provisions together in one bill. When Anthony Albanese realised that wasn't going to get through because neither the Greens nor the coalition supported it, he agreed to split them. But I think it's a best case scenario from their perspective politically. But, you know, a different opposition leader might change the game again. So Anthony Albanese will be watching closely, himself having been a veteran of a few leadership wars over the years.
Tom, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Regid.
That was Tom McElroy, political editor at Guardian Australia. This episode was produced by Camilla Hannan and Joe Koning, who also did the sound design and mixing. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. If you like this episode, please subscribe to Full Story. I'm Regid Ahmed. See you next time.